Welcome to Lit We Like Doing. A very, very warm day today.
Yeah, the weather's changing.
It's beautiful.
Great change of attitude, though.
Yes. Yes, the sun has got his hat on today. Right, on today's show, we're joined by the lovely Andy. The wet and wild Jordan.
Yeah, the rogue me.
Yes, and Rob, the windswept and interesting Rob. Yes, anyway, we've got all sorts to get through today. So let's just dive straight in, shall we? Because we got like awards controversies and all sorts in the news. Mm. It's really weird. But I think we're going to start off with Maya Angelou. Let's start with Maya Angelou. And Twitter hasn't really exploded with this, but there has been some reaction to this. The U.S. Postal Service issued a stamp in honor of Maya Angelou, but they've used the wrong quote on the stamp. The quote that they've used is, "A bird doesn't sing because it has an answer. It sings because it has a song." And the reason why they thought that was the right quote is because most people attribute it to Maya Angelou because she wrote the book I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings. But it's not from Maya Angelou. It's basically a quote from A Cup of Sun by John Walsh Angland, and it was published 2 years before Angelou's memoir. So this has caused a bit of a reaction on Twitter. Most people simply don't care. But some of the reaction on Twitter has been hilarious. Yes. Replacing the quote with things like, "One does not simply walk into Mordor." I like the propensity for Twitter users to take the mick out of things like this, especially when it's an organization like the U.S. Postal Service making this mistake. Initially, the U.S. Postal Service was very defensive, saying that, you know, this quote is definitely attributed to Angelou. But when they were approached by a couple of news outlets about it, and when they were pressed on it, they're like, okay, so maybe we made a mistake. So, yes. But I honestly don't think people actually care. No. It'd be
stamp,
nice,
really.
Yeah, exactly. Unless you're a stamp collector, in which case I do.
This would be really rare.
No, fair, yeah,
in which case, I think the "one does not simply walk into Mordor" one would be the best. Although there are a couple of others. Right. Anyway, moving on from that, I think we'll keep the Nigel Farage story for later.
Yes.
Guess what book is topping the Amazon bestseller list at the moment?
Go on.
Coloring books for adults.
Do I want to know what this book entails and what it includes inside?
You colour stuff in.
It's coloring books for adults. You colour stuff in as if you were 5 years old.
What actually are the pictures of?
Well, I'll tell you in a second. The best-selling title on Amazon in the US right now isn't Hapley's hugely anticipated second novel, Go Set a Watchman, or George R. R. Martin's Song of Ice and Fire fantasy series, or even Zoella's a much-mocked but much-bought young adult hit, Girl Online. It's Scottish illustrator Joanna Basford, and she's topping the charts with her colouring books for adults, taking the top spots on Amazon.com's bestseller lists. Not just one list, but lists. Basford's intricately drawn pictures of flora and fauna in Secret Garden have sold 1.4 million copies worldwide to date, with the newly released follow-up, Enchanted Forest, selling just under 226,000 copies already. They have drawn fans from Zooey Deschanel, who shared a link about the book with her Facebook followers, to the South Korean pop star Kim Ki-bum, who posted an image on Instagram for his 1.6 million followers. It's been crazy. The last few weeks since Enchanted Forest came out have been utter madness, but fantastic madness, said Eleanor Blatherwick, head of sales and marketing at the book's publisher, Small British Press, Lawrence King. "We knew the books would be beautiful, but we didn't realize it would be such a phenomenal success." And I've got to say, the intricate artwork is actually quite impressive in these books. You can just see why adults have been drawn to them, because it's not like your traditional kids coloring book. This is very definitely, you know,
seem like a challenge. So
it is a challenge, and I think people look at it like that. They don't have to draw. All of that effort is taken out for them. All they have to do is color it in, use their imagination, you know, things like that. And I think that's why people like it so much.
You do, because they don't. Though, what if I mean, how obviously it's going to be really good for the one who was publishing that book, but yeah. Who written the book? But against literally like all the other books that it's beaten really to the top, you have to think.
It makes sense because what you've got to think about, this kind of falls into the category of art therapy, right? People have very, very stressful lives, a lot more stressful than at any other point in history. When I was listening to the radio this morning on my way in, it was, the guy who's on the radio, we're talking about the different types of first world stress that affect people now. Things like, you know, you're stuck in the traffic and you're running late.
Yeah.
That's a one form of stress. You got to get the kids to school on time, another form of stress, you know. What should you have for dinner? Another form of stress. Mm. Are you on a diet or not? You know, there's so many things that cause you little bits of stress, and they accumulate. They don't just disappear. You know, they tend to build and build and build on each other into one big massive ball of stress. So something like this, where you can just concentrate on doing one simple task, which is colouring in to the best of your ability. It doesn't require any heavy lifting. It just requires you, some colouring pencils, and a little bit of peace and quiet.
Sounds good. I haven't coloured in since I was little.
Yeah.
It's a nostalgia feeling as well, isn't it?
This is why I said I would put this in the category of art therapy, because, you know, if you do a great job with the colouring in, you'll show it to other people. Say, this is what I did, you know?
Yeah, you can be really proud of it, can't you?
Exactly. But I think this is mainly selling, not so much for the colouring aspect, but for the fact that it is a great stress reliever. You know, so well done is all I can say to that. You know, it's a very strange situation where a colouring in book is
the
best.
Does this mean now we're going to see a huge boom of colouring in books aimed at adults?
Possibly not. We don't know. But there will be rivals. I don't think it'll be simple colouring in books, because this is all quite. The ones that are top of the list right now, they're all quite plant based. You know, Enchanted Forest, you know, Secret Garden.
Yeah, not like
it's all very floral.
This cat.
Yeah, it's all very floral. I think if you're going to go down that route, what you'll end up with is, you know, superheroes. Just a blank superhero, you colour it in however you want.
Mm. Or landscapes, like somewhat like Lord of the Rings and stuff, maybe?
Landscapes or science fiction, spaceships or weapons or something like that. It'll go down the geek route at some point. Or colour in your own comic book. That'll be an interesting...
That'd be an awesome book, that one.
Yeah, you know, colour in your own comic book. So you basically do the bare work for a comic book. That's my idea. That's my idea. And if someone steals it, I will have you.
that would actually be an awesome idea.
Anyway, moving on.
Hmm.
Self-published star Jacinda Wilder. Her book is called Madam X. It's apparently dark and sexy, about a woman who is drawn to two very different men. This is, with the title Madam X, I'm kind of putting this automatically into the category of 50 Shades of Grey.
I think that is about right.
Yeah. Anyway, the Michigan author, who lives on a farm with her husband Jack Wilder and five children, collaborates with her husband on her novels. We are about halfway through the first Madam X book, and as with every other Wilder title, Jack and I are working on it as a team. Even when we try to work separately on a project, it always ends up being collaboration. I am curious about this because she is a self-published star. She's basically sold... I thought about 2 million ebooks under her own steam, and now she has made a deal with Barclay Books, a seven-figure deal with Barclay Books.
Whoa.
You know, for traditional print. So I'm curious as to how this is going to play out, because this has the potential of going down the route of 50 Shades of Grey.
Yeah, but it sells, doesn't it?
Hey?
It's a genre that sells. So
it's a genre that sells, but I mean, it's a genre that will quickly burn out, just like Twilight, you know, the dark fantasy. Sorry, but have you read normal fantasy? There's nothing light about normal fantasy. It's actually quite dark. So why is it dark? No, they called it dark romance, didn't they?
Yes, that's what Twilight was dubbed as.
Dark romance, not dark fantasy. Yeah, dark romance. But I mean, I'm sorry. I tried reading Mills and Boon once. That was definitely dark. Or at least it made me blind. My eyes make it stop. No. Enough with the rippling muscles and the loose shirts. No, just go away. You know, put on some clothes, man. What's with you? It's freezing. Anyway,
right.
Enough of that.
Yes.
Moving on to The Girl on the Train. Right. Paula Hawkins, acclaimed thriller, her is a runaway hit worldwide now. And it's even outselling The Da Vinci Code in hardback. The Da Vinci Code, not The Da Vinci Code. Yes, The Da Vinci Code in terms of hardback sales. The Girl on the Train is a story about it's a very English thriller about a woman who drinks too much, catches a train, and sees something she shouldn't. And it's been climbing its way to the top of the bestseller charts on both sides of the Atlantic, selling almost 2 million copies in less than 3 months. Ooh. That's a lot. Now, with it being this high profile now, that's definitely going to go for Hollywood adaptation. You can see Hollywood looking at this and going, money, 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 money.
They do. Definitely.
Well, you got to think they've done it with stuff like...
Twilight.
Twilight, they've done it with Harry Potter, they've done it with Lord of the Rings.
They did it with...
I mean, they've done it with 50 Shades. And
have you noticed how everyone who went to see the 50 Shades of Grey movie absolutely panned it?
Yes.
Mm. Said it was
critics
awful.
Critics do?
No, just people
in general. You'll have regular people going.
Oh.
But there's so many books that they've brought into movies like that, and the movies have just been terrible.
The thing is, this was the best thing, right? There were so many people who read the books and loved the books, but then when they saw the movie and saw it on screen, suddenly realized that the books were actually highly pornographic. and they're like, I let my kid read this. She's only 12. Why are you letting your 12-year-old read a book that features all sorts of stuff like that? Apparently, a lot of people didn't realize what certain scenes in the book were actually about, or misunderstood what certain implements actually were.
I mean, you've got
until they saw them in the movie.
You've got people that see that view, though, and you've also got people that like say that, oh, this wasn't included in the film, that was in the book. I don't know what the bits were, but... You're like, I'm guessing some things in the book you won't be allowed to put on the screen because you won't be able to release it.
You'd be able to release it, but it wouldn't be made by a major Hollywood studio. It'd be made by a much smaller Hollywood studio, you know, with actresses and actors who have very odd names.
Yes.
Yeah. And you would only be able to buy it in certain shops. Or watch it on the internet.
Yep.
And now that I've said that, you know there's going to be a 50 Shades of Grey. Really, really one of those versions of 50 Shades of Grey.
I'm going to enjoy waiting for you to explain this right without actually announcing what you go on about.
Yes. If you haven't guessed what I'm on about already, then I'm not going to tell you.
If you haven't guessed, you're too young.
Yes, you're far too young for this news story. moving on to something which you can listen to now. You're safe. It's fine. British Science Fiction Awards. Right. Now, the late Ian Banks, right? Brilliant author. Really good sci-fi stuff. He wrote a book that it caught people off guard. It was kind of gruesome and graphic, and called The Wasp Factory, right? Now, The Wasp Factory introduced people to psychotic teenager Frank, who lured countless insects to their doom in his contraption that he called The Wasp Factory. And artist Tessa Farmer decided to build the Wasp Factory as a sculpture.
What?
Yes. She actually decided to build the Wasp Factory as a sculpture. It's not an actual working contraption, but...
Ah, fair enough.
From electrocution to crushing, drowning in urine to burning alive, the narrator of the late Scottish writer's debut novel delights in detailing the many different ways wasps can die when they enter his Wasp Factory. Now, Farmer's recreation of Banks' torture device has won the British Science Fiction Award for Best Art, taking the prize ahead of a host of other artists. Tessa Farmer, according to the report, Tessa Farmer was not expecting it at all. Farmer is the great-granddaughter of the horror writer Arthur Machen, and says that The Wasp Factory is her favorite book. It stayed with me forever and has influenced my work a lot. She said some of it, her recreation of The Wasp Factory, is taken from the book, but she's also interpreted it in her own way as well. I would have loved to have known what he thought of it, you know, as would many other people. So, yeah, it's going to be shown at the Victor Wynne Museum of Curiosities in London this summer, following their exhibition at last year's World Science Fiction Convention. They amazed everyone who saw them at Worldcon, said awards administrator Donna Scott. She is an amazing talent. I've got to agree, because it looks phenomenal.
Well, you've got... I mean, that's what you call art, isn't it?
It looks amazing.
I mean, we've had our arguments over modern art, haven't we?
Countless times. Well,
and that's when you look at something like that, you realise, though, how good art actually is if you do it right.
Well, the thing is, this is based on an existing work of literature. Yeah. I mean, The Wasp Factory isn't just a pulp novel. It's actual literature.
Mm.
You know, if you read it, you will begin to understand it's about the darker side of humanity. And the fact that this is, you know, built and inspired by that book is a great thing. It's a great thing.
Mm.
I just hope this remains as a one-off piece and people don't carry it into their heads to try and mass-produce it as a curio, as merchandise.
Yeah.
Mm. What we've got to hope, right, is no one actually decides to try and make it work as well.
Yes, I know. Anyway, moving on to another science fiction award. This time the Hugo Awards, and there is controversy at the awards.
When isn't the controversy at any awards?
That's true.
The Oscars.
There's always controversy at Oscars.
There isn't. You lie. There is no controversy at the Oscars. There never is. And I'm not, you know, I'm not saying this because Hollywood agents have pointed a gun at my head. going, you will deny all controversy. And I don't know why I did that in a semi-Arnold Schwarzenegger accent.
I didn't notice that there.
It was like Arnold Schwarzenegger crossed with that guy who runs the local Indian takeaway.
I like that one. I do like that. That was clever.
Anyway, yes. Moving on. Well, the Hugo Awards, as I was saying, right?
Now,
there's this ongoing issue with awards, all types of awards from, you know, whether it's movies, video games, whatever. There's an ongoing issue with awards that has become more and more prominent over time. And that is the whole idea of inclusiveness, right? See, what's been happening, and I actually agree with the protest groups on up to a point on this, right? The protest groups, one of them is called Sad Puppies, right? What they're protesting about is that the current list, the shortlist for the Hugo Award, the Hugo Science Fiction Award, it's inclusive, but overly so, to the point where they're actually removing people who have far more talent just to pander to specific minority groups and say, look at us. You know, look how fair we are. And it's kind of it's taking positive prejudice too far.
Mm.
If you see what I mean,
yeah.
You have to take affirmative action has gone too far when it starts affecting just normal everyday people. I mean, at the end of the day, equality does not mean you pander to these groups. Equality just means you treat them the same as everybody else.
Yeah, equality.
You know, you don't look at the color of their skin or what gender they are or how old they are or or anything like that or what their sexuality is or anything like that. You treat them as a normal person because that there is no such thing as normal. Yeah. So you treat them as a person.
Like, equality should be
if
like,
they are a good writer.
Not a problem.
If they're a good writer like, and they've written a brilliant book. Then treat it as them being a good writer and a brilliant book.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, didn't we discuss before that there was a book awards that only catered to, like female authors?
Yeah.
Mm.
And there wasn't a male one?
Yes.
Because of equality?
Yeah.
In a way.
Yeah, if that was the other way around, right, it'd be classed as sexist.
Yeah, mm. I know. And this is the sad part. You know, they've taken this whole idea of equality and just pushed it and pushed it and pushed it and pretty much destroyed it now. Mm. I mean, that's the problem with these with award ceremonies, like awards like the Hugo. It's their idea of inclusive is, you know, derogatory to the whole idea of equality.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I do agree with the Sad Poppies group. Although there is a great quote, a great tweet that's come out from this about this whole Hugo awards mess. Awards are for stroking egos and let regular people to judge the rich and beautiful. That's all.
Hmm.
So, yes. Anyway, it's an interesting one. And Sad Puppies did present their ideal list of suggested nominees in February. Their suggested list was best novel... The Dark Between the Stars by Kevin J. Anderson, Trial by Fire by Charles E. Gannon, Skin Game by Jim Butcher, Monster Hunter Nemesis, which I'm assuming is something to do with the game Monster Hunter, by Larry Correa, Lines of Departure by Marco Clouse. The best novella they've got down as Floor by Arlen Andrews Sr., One Bright Star to Guide Them by John C. Wright, and Big Boys Don't Cry by Tom Cratman, right? But that's very different to... the actual Hugo Awards shortlist, which I'm going to see if I can find. Basically, what they're saying is that instead of voting for anyone, you should vote no. Basically, don't vote at all.
Yeah.
That's what they're trying to say.
I mean, when you're looking at them awards, though, I know what you've said. Where the
I got the nominees.
Get them to specific things, but it's a lot different to when you got like your movie awards because you've got obviously nobody votes for them.
Yeah. I mean, in the actual nominations, the real nominations for the Hugo Award, the best novel is and the best novels nominations are Ancillary Sword by Anne Leckie, The Dark Between the Stars by Kevin Anderson, The Goblin Emperor by Catherine Addison, Lines of Departure by Marco Clouse, A Skin Game, a novel of the Dresden Files by Jim Butcher. Best novella, I didn't do no novellas. Big Boys Don't Cry by Tom Cratman. Floor by Arlen Andrews, One Bright Star to Guide Them by John C. Wright, Pale Realms of Shade by John C. Wright again, and Plural of Helen of Troy by John C. Wright. So three John C. Wright novels there. I wonder who's going to win that one. You know, it goes on, but, you know, Best Graphic Story, Miss Marvel Volume 1, Rat Queens Volume 1, Zombie Nation Book 2, Saga Volume 3, and Sex Criminals Volume 1. Dramatic Presentation or Long Form. Captain America.
Basically a movie.
Yeah.
A book made into a movie.
Captain America, The Winter Soldier, Edge of Tomorrow, Guardians of the Galaxy, Interstellar, and The Lego Movie.
I really hope that one wins.
Yes.
I love The Lego Movie.
Dramatic Presentation, Short Form, Doctor Who, Listen, The Flash, Pilot, Game of Thrones, The Mountain and the Viper, Grimm, Once We Were Gods, and Orphan Black, by Means Which Have Never Yet Been Tried. So, yeah. There's a lot of awards at the Hugo as part of the Hugo Awards, but I don't know. I don't like this whole idea of controversy. But
there's always going to be it, though. It doesn't matter how you look at this. There's always going to be someone that disagrees with it and go, "That shouldn't have won." Or
yeah, I know.
Whatever happened to that one?
I know. I know. It's just kind of it's sad that it happens. It's sad that they can't simply judge something on its own merits. They have to include something else on it. You know, it has to come in on the back of something else. Yeah. Anyway, we'll watch what happens with that. Moving on, there is a book coming out. This one is one that I'm going to read. It's a book called The Old Boys. Right. Public schools like Eton and Harrow and stuff like that. They're very much the domain of the upper crust, yes? Of the future leaders of the country, things like that. Anyway, there is a book called The Old Boys, and it is effectively a secret history of public schools. It features little known stories drawn from years of research in school archives, discloses tales of teenage insurrection, from prefect revolutions, masters held at sword point, and even a gunpowder plot of their own. The extraordinary history reveals how public schoolboys attempted to seize control of their own education with mass walkouts, fortnight-long barricades, and battles so accomplished they required the intervention of local militia.
Battle sword.
Battles, and yes.
A fortnightly.
Yeah, I mean, they basically laid siege. They basically turned the school into a fortress, and forced local militia to basically fight them.
I told you that is basically St. Trinian's.
No, it's not. It's not St. Trinian's at all. It's a long way from St. Trinian's. I mean, we're talking about holding their teachers at sword point. And if they had guns, it would be at gunpoint. Yeah. I didn't see any of that in St. Trinian's.
Depends which one you're watching.
If they had guns, so...
Yeah.
If it was a good weekend, then...
Well, they mainly had swords. But, I mean, it's ridiculous. They'd never get away with anything like that right now. I'm actually interested in reading this old boy's book.
I am.
Just to see what the hell they got up to and...
How many... I mean, you have to think how much can they get up to. How big is the book?
I don't think it's going to be that long, but it's still going to be an interesting read. Anyway, we've got two more stories before we move on to the next section. Octavia Spencer, right? The actress, Oscar-winning actress Octavia Spencer has laughed off a report on Monday that she snubbed her guests during a recent book signing at a Barnes & Noble bookstore in Los Angeles. She tweeted out, "Got a laugh when people would actually believe that you were rude to a child at your children's book signing." Right, now Spencer was at the bookstore signing copies of her new children's book, Randy Rhoads' Ninja Detective, The Sweetest Heist in History, which is basically the second book in the series about young detectives and her fellow ninja detectives, DC and Pudge. This time, the crime-solving trio head to Brooklyn, where they uncover an art heist, right? Mm. And apparently, she was quite rude to people at the book signing, causing some of them to up and leave and ask for refunds, right?
Mm.
Now, she says she's claiming that none of this is true, basically, which is what her tweet suggests. Whereas there, in the comments for the article I'm looking at, there are people who claim they were there. Now, I'm not sure what to believe on this one.
Unless somebody's recorded it.
Well, it's not that. It's just the first claim about this appeared in the Daily Mail. And given the Daily Mail's history with this sort of stuff, yeah. I'm honestly unsure as to whether they're actually telling the truth or whether this is just another one of their sensationalist headlines that they basically made up.
You've got to think, though, as well, you wouldn't, in like the age we're in now, social media and everything, if you do one thing wrong, somebody mentions it.
All over the internet for a good long time.
So it's not really something, and at your own book signing, it's not something you're going to do, is it? I know, well, you can't.
Thing is, if the Daily Mail lied about it, then it's defamation of character.
Yeah.
You know, which means they could be sued. But at the end of the day.
Only if it's proved, though, really.
I'm sure that it's a book signing at a Barnes & Noble store. They'll have security cameras.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if there's any truth in it, then if I was Octavia Spencer, I'd pursue... If there was no truth in this, right?
Mm.
If it was a complete and utter lie caused by the Daily Mail, I would pursue this to the death and I would sue the Daily Mail. Mm. And I would use whatever film footage was available.
Oh, yeah.
But if there's some truth in it, then, you know... Obviously, she needs to explain herself.
Yeah.
She is an Oscar-winning actress, so she is effectively a public figure. She needs to explain herself, because it's not going to reflect well on her.
I think she'll be a potential role model as well to some people.
She is a potential role model. Mm. She is. There's no potential. She is a role model to lots of kids, you know?
Mm.
So she needs to explain why she's behaved like that.
Mm.
It's a bit. I hate to put it in these terms, but it's a bit like Clarkson, which is hilarious. Have you seen what's happened with Clarkson?
It's all fell through.
Hey,
the police aren't pursuing it anymore.
No. That's not the funny bit. You guys haven't heard?
No. Nope.
Right. You guys haven't heard? Right. Nope. Clarkson has been sacked from the BBC. Yeah,
oh, we know that. Yes, Hammond and May have gone as well.
Yeah. Well, they're having him back for one specific reason.
Oh yeah. So they don't have to.
He's hosting Have I Got News for You, You know what that means.
Oh, this will be fun. Episode.
You know what that means. It means Paul Burton and what's his face?
Ian Hislop.
Ian Hislop are going to have his life on national TV.
This is going to be fun.
They're going to rip it out of him so bad. I mean, they may even just serve him cold steak and chips just to see what he does. Yeah, it's going to be fun.
I know they've said that he's coming back for the Top Gear Live events, which have been renamed, but that's because...
Fifth Gear. The classic car show. I'm sorry, Jodie Foster is so much better looking than he is.
But it's one of them things that the BBC have brought him back
not Jodie Foster.
Jodie Kidd.
Jodie Kidd is so much better looking than Clarkson.
Yes.
And she drives better than he does as well. Moving on to our final news story, and this is just the best. And this is one of the reasons why we love 2000 AD. And this really should have been on the comic show, and I might talk about it then again. Nigel Farage.
Oh, yes.
The UKIP leader has been sent up as a rabble-rousing demagogue who invokes the wrath of Judge Dredd in a 2000 AD comic, and they've renamed him Bilious Barrage. it's great.
That's brilliant. But can they get away with that then?
Yes. Yeah.
With it being an election soon? Or are they playing it after?
No. The thing is, it's parody, so you can get away with it any time. It's been written by Ian Edgington and drawn by Dave Taylor. The story, People Like Us, will be released in the Judge Dredd magazine monthly anthology. It's set in Dredd's hometown, Megacity One, after the Day of Chaos in 2033. We're in a world where the economy is struggling and where alien businesses are being invited to set up a shop to bring in much-needed skills and labour. There's a lot of prejudice. They're coming down here taking our jobs when, in actual fact, they're making a vital contribution to the economy, said Michael Mulcher at 2000 AD. When a series of terrorist bombings are attributed to alien sympathisers, the local politician Bilious Barrage takes to the streets to whip up fervour. The thing that about Bilious is that although he is technically a citizen, he fled to the other side of the world during the Day of Chaos to ride it out. And now he's returned to restore his city to its former glory, and he's horrified to find these immigrants are all over the place. Obviously, Dredd takes an interest in any rabble-rousing, and it does not end well for Barrage. 2000 AD said it had a long tradition of taking a pop at authority, with Thatcher executed on the steps of St. Paul's Cathedral by the Volgans in its very first issue, and Blair reimagined as the power-crazed superhero BLAIR1. Is he bionic or demonic? Edgington said that he came up with his Barrage figure because he wanted to show that those ivory towers of authority make great targets and that the people who live in them should not be trusted. The man has a kick me sign on his back, and 2000 AD is ever happy to oblige, he added. And I say three cheers for 2000 AD. I'm sorry, but that is just genius.
I love it. I love things like that. I love any sort of parody in... Really, anything like that. Brilliant to see.
Yes. Right. We're going to take a very, very quick break there, and we'll be back in a couple of minutes with some more interesting stuff.
TV. There's a lot of TV. Even the internet is TV these days. And if there's too much out there to know what to watch and what not to watch, well, tune in to the Geek Show Podcast Network's very own TV show, On The Box.
Welcome back to Literary Loitering, and we're going to talk about something that I found quite interesting. There's a group of critics from around the world have put together a list of the 21 best children's books of all time, right? And I want to go through this list and see if you guys actually agree with this. Starting at number 21, The Hobbit by J.R.R. Tolkien.
Yeah, that was a children's book, though, wasn't it? It was
No, it wasn't.
I don't class that as a children's book. It's more like Lord of the Rings.
Let me put it this way. Right.
I mean, there was a children's
when
book.
When I was a kid...
Published for it.
No, no. When I was a kid, The Hobbit was not a children's book. It, you know, for me, a children's book should only ever have been a children's book. The Hobbit was not classed as a children's book. If you went to a library when I was a kid and you looked for The Hobbit, it was in adult fiction.
I mean, I can remember, like,
it wasn't in children's fiction. It wasn't like the Chronicles of Narnia or the Chronicles of Brédain or Stig of the Dump or anything like that. It was in adult fiction next to The Lord of the Rings.
Because I know that, I mean, I've had I have online about a home somewhere. It was like a Hobbit children's book. It was about 200 pages.
Yeah, that's not The Hobbit then.
Nah.
It'll be the kids' version of The Hobbit, but it won't be The Hobbit. See, this is the thing. The Hobbit, for me, never been a kid's book. Anyway, moving on. Goodnight Moon by Margaret Wise Brown and Pat Hancock, which I'm not sure I've read. I'd have to think about that. The Secret Garden by Frances Hodgson Burnett, which I think is a great kid's book. Pippi Longstocking by Astrid Lindgren. Harriet the Spy by Louise Fitzhugh. Sorry, Matilda by Roald Dahl. Yes. I agree with that.
Yeah.
His Dark Materials trilogy by Philip Pullman. Actually, the books aren't bad. They're better than Harry Potter. The Phantom Tollbooth by Norton Juster. Good. From the Mixed Up Files of Mrs. Basil E. Frankweller by E.L. Konigsberg. The Wind in the Willows by Kenneth Graham. Little House on the Prairie by Laura Ingalls Wilder.
Ooh.
Which is an unusual one, because most people don't know that Little House on the Prairie was originally a book. They'll be familiar with the TV series.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Especially as it's having a bit of a resurgence because of the Big Bang Theory. That's the weird irony in that. Little House on the Prairie, the TV series, has actually gained more popularity in recent years because Sheldon's girlfriend on The Big Bang Theory is a big fan of Little House on the Prairie and writes her own Little House on the Prairie fan fiction. So, yeah. A Wrinkle in Time by Madeleine L'Engle. The Wizard of Earthsea by Ursula Le Guin. I'm glad to see that one's on the list. Charlie and the Chocolate Factory by Roald Dahl. Winnie the Pooh by A.A. Milne. The Little Prince by Antoine de Saint-Exupéry. Little Women by Louisa May Alcott. Good one. And it is actually a kid's book.
Yes.
Most people don't realize it, but it is. Alice's Adventures in Wonderland by Lewis Carroll.
I love that book.
Where the Wild Things Are by Maurice Sendak. The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe by C.S. Lewis. And Charlotte's Web at number one by E.B. White. And I actually have to agree, Charlotte's Web is a truly excellent kid's book.
I will go with that one.
Yeah, I'm happy to see that as number one. And you know that what the best thing is? There is not a Harry Potter in sight on that list.
In the top 21, it's beautiful.
In top 21 kids' books chosen by critics from around the world, there is no Harry Potter. You have no idea how happy this makes me.
There's not any the fact that
Philip Pullman's...
No Twilight or anything either. No. So.
Twilight's not a kids' book.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. The fact that His Dark Materials, that trilogy made it onto the list, whereas Harry Potter didn't. That makes me immensely happy. I can trust this list now.
I can tell you, just seeing Harry Potter everywhere.
It's just kind of... it's not that. It's just when you look at... when people vote for the best kids' book, they always seem to go with Harry Potter, and everyone forgets Philip Pullman wrote a trilogy that was superb and so much better. He's kind of, and when you tell them, they go, But the thing is, there are other kids' books that didn't make it onto the list, which is unfortunate because they were great. I mean, some of the Pratchett stuff was brilliant. The Amazing Maurice and His Educated Rodents, The Wee Free Ben, and the rest of the Tiffany Aching books. But those all get classified as Discworld books. It's a really good list. Now, shall we test how knowledgeable you guys are, just to finish this off?
Go ahead, let's do it.
just to finish off the show, we're gonna pitch your wits here. And don't worry, I don't know these answers either.
It's
all right. So, this is apparently a children's quiz, right? That we found. It's the children's quiz, and we're going to start off with art and literature, right? Who had an encounter with the three bears?
Goldilocks.
Yeah, Goldilocks.
Yes. Who was created by... Sorry, what is the name of Winnie the Pooh's donkey friend?
Eeyore.
Who was created by Geppetto the Woodcarver?
Pinocchio.
Who is the bear in the Jungle Book?
Baloo.
What kind of creature was defeated by the three Billy Goats Gruff?
Troll.
Troll.
Who painted the Mona Lisa?
Da Vinci.
Who led a gang of outlaws in Sherwood Forest?
Robin Hood.
Robin Hood.
Who stole Christmas in a Dr. Seuss book?
The Grinch.
Grinch.
Who were all the king's horses and men unable to put together again?
Humpty Dumpty.
Who is the druid in the Asterix books?
I can't remember this one.
This one's one of those ones where they actually made a joke out of his name.
I know it. Getafix.
Getafix, yep. They made him sound like a drug dealer. Yes. Anyway, sculptures of which animals lie at the base of Nelson's column?
Lions.
Yes. It's only because he knows.
Yeah, he knows the question earlier.
Yeah. What is the name of the lion in The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe?
That one I can't remember.
Aslan.
There you go.
Talking to the mic, Jordan.
Because I mentioned that earlier as well.
I forgot that one.
Yes, talking to the mic, remember?
Mm-hmm.
Don't look at me, look at him.
Yeah.
Okay. What is the name of the wizard at the court of King Arthur?
Merlin.
Who has written the prize-winning book, The Day I Swapped My Dad for Two Goldfish?
I don't know that one.
I don't know.
Neil Gaiman.
Oh, sorry?
Neil Gaiman.
Sorry.
And what is the name of the recreated theatre from Shakespeare's time in London?
The Globe.
Okay. Moving on to part two of our...
How many parts is there?
Yeah, part two of art and literature, right?
All right.
Who picked a peck of pickled peppers?
Peter Piper.
In Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, what is Charlie's surname?
Bucket.
Which artist painted a number of pictures of sunflowers? And the first time I asked this question, right, before the show, just as a test run, neither of these two knew the answer. They know the answer now.
Yeah, I said Neil Buchanan from Art.
Yeah, Neil Buchanan from Art Attack is apparently a famous artist who painted lots of pictures of sunflowers.
Well, he did.
Buchanan.
He did though.
And what was your answer to this?
I said David Shepherd.
David Shepherd,
because he used to do stuff like that, but then he moved on to wildlife more.
Yeah, apparently Vincent Van Gogh was not an answer that they thought of, even though Sunflowers by Vincent Van Gogh.
Van Gogh.
Huh?
I don't care. Even though Sunflowers is like the most expensive painting in the world.
Painted something called sunflowers.
He painted a number of pictures of sunflowers.
Oh.
Anyway, what kind of animal is Beatrix Potter's Mrs. Tiggywinkle?
I said a cat.
I'd said a rabbit.
A hedgehog.
Not a little close.
close anyway.
What is the name of Peter Pan's piratical enemy?
Hook.
Not as Andrew said earlier. Not Dr. Hook, as Andrew said earlier. Not a 70s rock group. Peter Pan's enemy was not glam rock.
if he ever like rebooted that into like a like semi-space setting or whatever.
So you want to do Peter Pan as if it was Tommy, you know, Pinball Wizard. right, okay, moving on. In the nursery rhyme, how much are the bells of St. Martin's awed?
I can't remember this one now, we said it earlier.
Wasn't like half
five farthings. Right. What is the name of Harry Potter's pet owl?
Hedwig.
And this, there's a movie called Hedwig and the Angry Inch, and whenever I hear Harry Potter calling his owl, it just makes me remember that movie, and then I have this weird dichotomy in my head. Is this still a kid's movie, or is this gone very, very weird? And a bit Yugoslavian. Anyway, moving on. Who is the son of Widow Twanky and the brother of Wishy Washy?
Aladdin.
Yes, only because I told you the answer earlier.
I can remember that earlier.
Who created Tracy Beaker?
Jacqueline Wilson.
That one.
Right. Where are we? What is the artistic technique of gluing a number of items together to form a new work called?
Collage.
Well done. Which character in Alice's Adventures in Wonderland muttered, oh dear, I shall be late?
The White Rabbit.
Who has a dog called Snowy and a friend called Captain and is friends with Captain Haddock?
Tintin.
In which fairy tale does Gerda rescue her friend Kai from the title character?
I don't know that one.
The Snow Queen.
Oh, it isn't it? Oh, yes. Damn.
In which helped by his slave Morgiana, who foiled the 40 thieves?
Oh,
Alibaba.
Only because I told you earlier.
Yeah, only because you told me that
one earlier. Same as Aladdin.
And what is the name of Owen Coifer's teenage criminal mastermind?
I don't know.
Artemis Fowl.
Is it?
Ah. Yeah. Right. Let's test you on a couple more questions, shall we? Let's see. Entertainment. Let's do some entertainment questions for you guys.
Hang on. Let's see how good you are.
Right. We have been joined by Ryan and Rob from The Geek Show and Cinema Eclectica for the entertainment round. Let's do this. Right.
Are we getting scored on this?
Don't worry. It's just it's just for laughs.
So I don't win a boat. Cash prizes.
It's a living room suite.
Wasn't that stuff that used to get on Buzz like that? Used to win.
No, Bullseye I was thinking of. It is a boat you could have won.
Yes. Oh. Here's what you could have won. Apparently you get nothing in this game for two in a bed. I wonder what that meant. Right, beginning the entertainment round. And remember, this is the children's quiz.
Ah, right.
Right. I just want to stress that. This is the children's quiz. Sheriff Woody Pride and Buzz Lightyear are major characters in which series of films?
Toy Story.
Who were the winners of 2010's Britain's Got Talent?
Oh, God.
Pudgy the dog.
Patrick Swayze.
No, it was... It wasn't Pudgy.
Spellbound.
Well done.
Which was Spellbound?
Real answers are boring. Yeah.
What is the name of Donald Duck's girlfriend?
Daisy.
Not Donald Duck.
In which town do the Flintstones live?
Bedrock.
Clearly doesn't exist, Rock. Yes.
What came over the hill and blew woo woo?
The funk train.
A monster?
Actually, it's pretty close. It's the runaway train.
I prefer my image better.
Yeah. Yeah. it's spelled woo woo. I thought you were going to go with the ravish with the
it's Ric Flair.
The Ric Flair train.
Ric Flair is guiding the funk train.
Yeah,
it's a glorious. Is that why you went with the funk train?
Yeah,
is that why you went with the funk train?
No, my brain just thought that'd be a good idea to say that.
Yeah, he's going to use that on a wrestling show now. Which television program shares its name with a naval flag?
With a naval what?
Flag.
Blue Peter, innit?
Yeah.
Nice shout.
Oh, I've got boring answers. That's not right. Yeah. Games Master.
Yeah. How are Ortiz, JB, Marvin and Aston known collectively?
Who, sorry?
Marvin and Aston collectively known as?
NWA.
GLS.
GLS.
And my answer was better.
Yes. Which organization is based on Tracy Island?
Thunderbird.
No,
it's
not.
What was that?
Which organization?
Oh, International Rescue. Oh.
That's it.
Are you telling me that Thunderbirds aren't a thing?
No, Thunderbirds are just the vehicles. The organization's called International Rescue. Yeah.
They're a really boring group. Then Thunderbirds is an awesome name. They should have called themselves that.
Yeah. Anyway, what is the name of the nanny played by Emma Thompson in two films?
Nanny McPhee.
I said it first. Yep. Which resident of Jellystone Park is smarter than the average bear?
Yogi.
Boo Boo.
Boo Boo. Hey Boo Boo.
Leona
Yogi's
Lewis.
Yogi's the stupid one. Yeah. Eh? Boo Boo never gets. He's the one with the. He's turned on that guy.
Yep. Leona Lewis and Alexander Burke are former winners of which competition?
X Factor.
Britain's Got Peers. Yeah.
What is the name of Shrek's wife?
Fiona.
Not Shrek.
That's Shrek.
Female Shrek.
Which television series is set in the town of Pontypandy?
Ballycus Angel.
What?
In the Night Garden.
Nope.
In the Night Garden. Anyway, wow. Myself laughing watching that. That's hilarious. Totally sober as well.
Go on. It's not Postman Pat.
Oh, Fireman Sam.
Yes.
It wasn't Postman Pat.
Here's a bit of trivia, though. Postman Pat and Community are both set in the same town. Greendale.
Yes. I know.
Yeah.
What is the name of the hero in The Lion King?
Scar.
Simba.
I thought it was Timon.
Scar's quite heroic.
No, Pumbaa. It's definitely Pumbaa. They call him Mr. Pig, remember?
Yes.
Right, moving on to part two of entertainment. Wolverine is the leader of which band of superheroes?
The Avengers.
Really? He's not the leader of either.
I know, that's the thing.
He's just the hairy dude. The founder.
Well, technically the answer to this is actually Alpha Flight, which nobody can guess.
Is it like Force X or something like that?
Is it Professor Xavier is like the leader of the X-Men, if anything.
Yeah. Who fell in love with a robot called Eve?
Oh, Wally.
Got it first.
You said it wrong.
It's Wally.
You got to say it like you mean it. Say it like you mean it.
Go on then, Rob. Show us how we do it.
Yeah. What is the name of the vehicle in which Scooby-Doo and his friends travel?
The Mystery Machine.
What is the
come-down machine.
What is the name of the dog in Shaun the Sheep?
I have no clue.
You should know this, Rob.
Why should I?
I've seen the film. They don't say words in the film.
Really?
That's what it's all the same. It's like going into Middlesbrough and talking to normal people.
Shot fired. Sorry, it's not Gromit. It's not Gromit. It's Bitzer.
Oh, that's a tough one.
Yeah, that is a tough one. Which breed of dogs were menaced by Cruella de Vil?
Dalmatians.
Pugs deserve it.
Pugs.
Which stringed instrument is bigger than a violin but smaller than a cello?
Piano.
Actually, he's technically correct.
I'm also funny as well. It's a twofer, because it has got strings.
Yes, it's a viola. Though.
Piano is bigger. Grand piano is even bigger.
Yes. Anyway, what is the name of the character played by Karen Gillan in Doctor Who?
Amy.
My future wife.
My wife. You can have her, actually. I don't want to.
What was the name of the Kung Fu Panda in the film of that name?
Not a clue.
Paul.
Because it's one word off amazing things.
Which television presenter hosts Blast Lab and Total Wipeout?
Oh,
the annoying one from Top Gear.
The small one, Richard Hammond.
It could be any of them. They're all annoying on Top Gear.
The ferret.
The miniature one. The small
Which
guy.
Film and musical are about a miner's son who wishes to become a ballet dancer?
Billy Elliot.
Which film had a 2009 follow-up described as the squeakquel?
Oh, Alvin and the Chipmunks.
Yep.
I should know that.
I love the first film. The first one was fantastic at that.
So. You shouldn't admit that.
There is. Oh, my God. There is an In the Night Garden question.
Here we go, Rob.
Bring it.
This is where it gets it wrong, though.
What is the name of the train in the Night Garden?
I know that. It's the Ninky Nun.
Oh my God!
I knocked all that out of the park. Yeah.
What does the French song "Frère Jacques" mean in English?
Oh. I have no pride left. I've just ruined it all. The last question. Yeah, no. Is that what it means?
No. It means brother John.
It seems so weird, right? Singing English stuff like that. The one now.
What is the name of the current Blue Peter tortoise?
Blue Peter's still a thing.
Yeah, apparently.
Michelangelo. More importantly, the stab of tortoise.
Yep.
Donatello.
Shelley. Shelley, apparently.
Really lazy.
We've done this question already. That's not good. We've done that question already. It's which resident of Jellystone Park is smarter than the average bear? We did that already. Why are you doing it twice?
Wasn't the answer Boo Boo?
Someone like that.
Boo Boo never gets caught. So was Yogi.
I don't
know. Yogi's the stupid one.
What was the ranger called? I can't remember what the ranger was.
I don't know. It's a cartoon. It's not even real.
We've done arts and entertainment. I think we can pretty much call it a day with those two rounds. There were more rounds in that children's quiz.
But, is there a movie one?
Hey,
is there a movie?
Well, that was in the entertainment section.
Oh.
Just because I got the Ninky Nun question right, I think I won.
Yeah.
You guys never stood a chance on that one. That was about that.
I was waiting for someone else just to jump in. Like, it's a moment of glory.
It's the Ninky Nunk and it flies and everything.
Right, okay. That's it from us here on Literary Loitering. We have loitered enough for the last part with a quiz of all things. So, we'll see you all next week. I've been Rob.
I've been Jordan.
And I've been Andy.
And I've never taken this seriously, not one second.
Yes.
No, he hasn't.
Thank you, Rob and Ryan, for joining us for
the In the Night Garden question, he did take that serious.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, you can't not take In the Night Garden serious. If you dropped a Balamori question on my lap, I would knock that out of the park as well.
Who lives in the pink house?
Weirdos. Stoddard.
Right. On that note, we'll see you all next week.